Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And I'm Alyssa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack fiction without the friction.
It, like, changes every week. You never know what to expect. I like that one. That's good.
Yeah, we're going to try to stick with that one.
Okay. By the way, shout out to Pod Sound School for the review on iTunes. Very nice of you. They liked your voice.
Oh, well, that's...
They said you have a quirky voice.
I'm like Zooey Deschanel. I'm the manic pixie dream girl of this podcast. Anyway, but yes, thank you for the review. If you want to review us, we're on Apple Podcasts, and that would help the show. You can also hit us up at Unboxing Story on the Twitters and the Facebooks.
Yep.
Or at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com. It's Inklings Month.
Inklings!
And that includes people like Tolkien, C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis is next week. We might have a guest for that, so
yay!
Look forward to that. but I wanted to talk about the Tolkien movie that just came out. I put down magical realism to get the ball rolling.
Oh.
Because the trailer had a lot of heavy imagery of the war and there being different, like, visual effects that were, like, the, you know, the gas being, like, Balrog, or the, you know, or the fire being, like, the Balrog, and
dragons.
The smoke being, you know, like a dragon.
Or the whites from the Barrow Whites.
Yeah. So
Nazgul, which, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of, that kind of magical realism imagery, and I knew going into this, I had seen rumblings about this movie on Facebook some years ago, because it seemed like, and I'm pretty sure it's the same studio, because they were trying to get together a Tolkien movie and lean more heavily onto the Inklings in general, and it seems like now it got developed more into about the TCBS,
yes,
which I was unaware of before this, and all the stuff that led up to him eventually writing The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. But that initial expectation of it being kind of magically real was one of the things that I thought was really a strong element of the movie, in that it really brought to life the idea of his imagination,
yeah,
and the birth of that, and really what he loved about storytelling being portrayed in his life as a soldier. But then the other thing that I thought was, like, because you know, fiction is being so much more defined now by young adult literature, I saw that they were going to introduce the romance with Edith, who would be his wife, and that kind of had me being like, ooh, pump the brakes. I don't know if all this stuff in the trailer that's showing all the darkness and stuff of the war is really going to be, like, maybe they'll try to do that switcheroo of, like, once you're actually sitting there watching the movie, it's much more of a focus on this, you know, long, young love story. But I this is, like, one of my favorite movies this year so far. Like, I was enraptured by both counts, both, yeah, the romance and the personal, you know, quest that he's on to, like, ascertain his expertise, that what later would be recognized as expertise in language and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I loved, and I think what struck me most about the way they did the magical realistic realism part, is how, like, you probably didn't have to do that, and we still would have understood, oh, that's where he got the dragon from, or that's where he got a Balrog, or that's where he got his vision of the Nazgul as death and, like, all this stuff. Because the war was terrible, and it's all these horrifying things that we recognize from his stories. And, like, you probably didn't have to include that in there, but I think it made it less less gritty and less dark. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to say, because, I mean, you see, like,
Yeah, but
ghosts and stuff like swallowing people up on the thing. But instead of making it this like really dark, gritty, realistic view of his life, he was a fantasy writer. He was all about imagination and putting those things in there to kind of let you see this is what was in his mind when he was going through these things. Made it more hopeful of a story and more palatable, I guess, maybe.
Right. Because I think that that's the kind of dichotomy I was thinking of going in, was how are they going to make this relatable and at the same time honor the type of mind that he was. And I thought that they treaded that line well.
Right, because they didn't, like, totally transition into, okay, now we're in, you know, Middle Earth. Like in Finding Neverland, they kind of almost totally take you into a dream world when you see these things, and it wasn't that much.
Right.
It was just enough.
Yeah, it was tasteful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just enough to give you the taste of what this is, how his mind is processing the insanity that is going on around him,
right,
without, you know, him actually being insane and going into another, you know, it's not that big of a break with reality.
Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing with him and Edith's relationship, where it starts out with this very, like, he's very shy and he is very opinionated. And it shows how her interest in the same things that he had, you know, opera and art and music and stuff, she wanted to get inside his head.
Yeah.
And so as opposed to dumbing down the interest that he had, it showed how intelligent she was and how she was like a match with him.
I like it when they do that in romances, that they show both partners to be a match like that intellectually as well as in other ways.
Yeah.
Emotionally too.
I think
because, because they were both going through very similar emotional arcs as well. They were feeling very powerless and very stuck in their poverty and in their position. And like, they felt like they would have no future. And so, but showing that the both of them helped the other out of that place as well as were, you know, stimulating to each other intellectually and whatever was really nice to see.
Right. Cause I think that, I watched the trailer for a Mary Shelley adaptation that they did recently. And I think because of the strong women's movement that we're having now, there was much more of it was geared towards the showing these other poets that they have as kind of like these straw men that were trying everything that they could to push down Mary Shelley, and that her, because of her genius, that it's using, like, it's basically taking a lot of the women's movement tropes that we have in a lot of movies. And because I think it was being a little cliche about it, it seemed to be making all of the men in her life trying to push her down, and then using that to make it seem like, you know, using that to show how smart she is, rather than something like this, where I think they really showed two sides of the different, like, there's a priest that was very controlling of Tolkien, and there was a woman who was kind of Edith's caretaker, and it showed two sides of them, right? It didn't make them these horrible monsters, but at the same time, there are moments where you're just like, these people are going to go on to be this amazing couple.
Yeah, it's like, leave them alone.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
You're kind of like hoping that so it pulls at those emotional heartstrings without needing to make it necessarily like this deeply, because I think they could have gone that direction with Edith and made it seem like the woman's movement was happening back then.
Right.
And like, it's not necessarily, yeah. So like, but at the same time, they showed the reality of what it's like for a woman back then who is interested in art and
who wants that intellectual stimulation.
Yeah.
And that might have been part of why, well, we'll go into other bits about the Inklings, because they never did admit women to the Inklings. I didn't know that they had invited women to the earlier meetings to CBS. But anyway.
But and so another thing that you had mentioned and that I wrote down was language is magic.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Because, and they did a good job, I think, of threading that into both storylines too.
Yes.
That the reason that they fall in love is because she awakens in him the idea that these words that you're studying in school and that, like, you have this intellectual interest in, they have so much meaning to people. And if you could only imbue these words
also
with meaning, then, you know, you're going to, people are going to be eating out of your hand, basically. And she, there's this really cute scene where she's, you know, he says how beautiful the word, the term cellar door is. And she's like, well, how can you make that into a story? And at first he's just like, well, no, it's just, it's a interesting,
no, it's just a pretty word.
I'm just
it's
trying like, to have no. an intellectual conversation with you. And then because she forces him to do that, he turns cellar door into a magical place with this, you know, twisted tree.
Yeah, the tree
that
image was
is
awesome.
Both poison and
life,
elixir
and
at the
like,
same
you're
time.
You're just like, who are you, buddy? Where did this come from? I could sit here and listen to this all day.
Right.
And it was great. That was the thing. There were times in the movie theater where people were literally holding their breath. I felt like, mm-hmm. like it was just, we're just going to sit here and not make any noise and listen to him tell these amazing stories.
Right. And that, I think that they, it bounds that because as it being an independent film and because of our recent experience with different A24 pictures, there's a lot of pretension within independent film. And I was unsure whether they were going to make Tolkien's story unrelatable in order to push some kind of either agenda, to push some kind of visual style that would make it less tasteful and more about the director, you know, having some kind of vision. But that kind of thing made it so moving, like you were saying, and made it so that like, and I was thinking that it was like, this is like a single tier movie for me. Where it's like, it's not necessarily going super sentimental.
Right. Like, I wasn't, like, bawling.
And it wasn't necessarily super, like, I wrote down the Dead Poets Society.
Right.
Because the other storyline that, other than the romance this focuses on, is his Tolkien's childhood friends that formed a society called TCBS. I don't remember what that stood for.
I pulled it up. It's the Tea Club Barovian Society.
Right, because they met at a tea club.
Right.
And
a tea house of some kind.
That's another brilliant scene because it
shows their version of Starbucks, really.
It shows them in primary school.
Yeah.
And one of the members is like this, you know, they're teenage boys, so he's like talking about the maid, and Tolkien's all like upset by him, so he's like tries to make it as intellectual as possible and is pulling from this, story about
Hela
and talking about how she's this like great death giant.
She's actually Loki's daughter.
Oh yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Just so you know, in case nobody knew that,
but that becomes like their chant. And
right.
That's kind of like this kind of
Elhema.
Yeah.
I think that's how you say it.
And it becomes like this chant, and it's kind of like the Dead Poets Society, where
right.
poetry and these images become like, you know, there's a lot of guys, unlike me, who use sports as a metaphor for life. This idea that, like, we're working together for this brilliant, and they also play rugby, but, like, it becomes this thing that is, like, you know, very romantic to them, of, like, if we can capture life with these words.
Right.
We
could change the world.
Yeah, we can.
in good post-adolescent fashion.
Right. And so, yeah, so that making that journey for them of learning come to life in that way and making it seem exciting and showing the contrast, as two podcasts for now, we're going to go to talk about On Fairies, which is Tolkien's whole treatise on how fairy tales can be powerful and be moving. His beliefs seem to be contrary to the time, which was very conservative, very against sentimentality.
Very much into realism intellectualism, but mm-hmm. not in an emotional or because I guess they considered that a weakness to be mm-hmm. emotional about
right.
everything.
But then, as we've discussed a couple times, the World War I and World War II became this devastating,
yeah,
worldwide catastrophic event.
Yes.
And it's so interesting to me that somebody, a soldier that would go and actually see people die firsthand, would then be able to show how, on the one hand, there were so many noble, heroic warriors that, you know, sacrifice everything for the good of humanity, and this like treacherous evil that you're, you know, fighting against. And I liked that. That was another cool scene where he's talking with the professor and everybody else is like, the war is on, and they're all like happy.
Yeah.
And it was this really good subtle moment of like, he wants him to keep reading.
Yeah, he's like, forget the morons.
Talking
they
about.
Don't understand.
Right.
We're talking about, because what they're reading was also about war.
Right.
And the older gentleman understands what's going to happen to those guys. He's like, right. Half of them are not coming back. And yeah. I think it was probably more than half of them, actually. Britain lost a lot of people in World War One.
Right.
And so, like, the older man's just kind of like, yeah, this is, don't. Just keep reading. Like, you don't need to, this is a temporary thing and it's going to kill most of you guys.
Yeah.
And the rest of you are going to come back different.
Right.
And this is going to suck.
Yeah.
But let's not focus on that.
Right.
As opposed to all the guys that are like, yeah, we're going to go be heroes and make it. He's like, no, yeah. That's not how this works, guys. Yeah.
And so then later on when he's actually in the war, that moment speaks to his mindset during
right.
the war and how that would inform his writing about war. And it's what makes to me the Lord of the Rings so impactful as somebody who actually saw
war. Yeah,
because
he was a soldier. He'd been in that. He knows what that's like. And I think the best part of Lord of the Rings that comes from that is how different they all are when they come home. The hobbits especially.
Right.
Like the other guys are expecting, okay, like Aragorn's going to be king and Faramir, like the other people know, okay, we're growing up now. Not growing up, they already were adults, but like they know things are going to be different for them, but their culture is different, right? Like their culture was expecting them to be fighters and expecting them to have a certain demeanor when they come back from these things. The hobbits don't even know half of what's happened at all. So the four hobbits that had been on this quest come home and like there's people that are like fussing with them. They're just like, why are you even talking? Dude, I just killed like Nazgul.
Right.
What are you talking to me for?
And
the fact that Frodo can't even stay. Like Frodo doesn't even belong there anymore.
Right.
Because he's changed so much by this story.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam becomes a totally, like they all become totally different people coming home. I think that was like a huge deal. Since he had been Tolkien had been through war, he knows what that did to people, and he shows
right.
that in his characters.
Yeah, and I my last point I put down was how warriors not dilettantes, because I think that they really accurately showed how there are people that write to affirm life in other people, and there was this idea of him learning, you know, through his relationships with the other guys in his life about what it means to be, you know, humble and to be honorable, and their whole fellowship with each other. That was another big theme, being something that made them more powerful as writers and
as artists
powerful
in general,
as people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like there was a scene where the one guy's dad is the headmaster of
their elementary or their primary school, whatever they call it over there. I don't
know. And he comes home and he was planning on studying. So he says, all your friends have to go home. And, you know, he's growing up and he's, you know.
And even that they did tastefully. Like he doesn't go and like start some big, huge fight with his dad. Like he's not out there screaming. I mean, they were drunk. He could have totally gone and screamed at his father, but he didn't. He was very respectful to his father. And he said, sir, I made a promise to my friends, and I would be going back on a promise of hospitality if I told them all to go home. I would prefer not to do that. Like that's,
right.
And he did it very nicely.
Right.
And his dad's like, okay. And I'm like,
right.
There you go.
I think that there's this modern idea of intellectualism being the creating of men that just sit around and do nothing all day.
Right.
But what this movie showed was these people are passionate about art, because they feel like it improves their lives.
Right.
And that was showing somebody who was a young person who wasn't able to talk to his dad, wasn't able to, you know, be honest with him about certain things. And that was the first time he was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stand up to him. And he was able to finally have that confidence.
Because his friends too were encouraging him. It's like, we're
right.
here with you. We're standing with you. And he's like, that's it. I'm going to do it now.
Right.
Same thing with when the scene on the trolley when Tolkien is like, they have a bunch of girls and they're have it doing what college students do,
yeah.
just hanging out. And Tolkien isn't really into it because he's still pining
for Edith.
And one of the other guys in the group starts to fight about Tolkien because he's mad because he's going to lose his scholarship and he's going to have to go home. And they're all like, well, why didn't you tell us? Like, we're here for you.
Right.
We're going to support you and we will do whatever we have to do to like make this work. Like, we're going to make this work out for you. Like, it's all good. And, you know, it was just really neat to see that kind of friendship portrayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even though, and then we were, I was going to bring up the, one of the members was, and I don't know how, if they know for certain that he was or not, mm-hmm. but one of the members was portrayed as homosexual. But in a very, like all of it, like I said, was done in a very tasteful way. Mm-hmm. And he was like crushing on Tolkien, but he never said anything or did anything about it. Mm-hmm. But he still in his way loved him mm-hmm. and expressed that love for him in the way that he could.
Right.
Knowing that Tolkien was in love with Edith and was not likely to love him back. Mm-hmm. Even with that, in that friendship, they didn't make it all about, well, he's only here because he's in love with Tolkien. He's right. here because he is friends with these guys.
He was a full character.
Right. He was a full,
very
interesting, well-rounded character. He actually ends up being part of what inspires Tolkien to keep writing himself afterwards, because he goes to, after his friends perish in the war, goes to his mother and asks if he can publish his poetry, because he believes that guy's poetry matters to the world, and this needs to be out there. Mm. And so that's kind of inspired his own writing.
Right.
Anyway, should we take a quick break, and then we can come back and talk about what we thought the ending was going to be?
Oh, okay, sure. We'll see you on the other side. So, I think there were some other expectations going into this. Mine was that there would be some kind of bridge between the TCBS and the Inklings.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that they, because there's a kind of a trope generally, but this was really a lot. What I heard about with is a movie called Book of Henry, where a child dies of cancer, I think maybe midway through the movie, but then there's these things that the mother does with that child that then there's another kind of adopted child at the end, and then she picks that up and does it with that child. And so it's this weird thing with screenwriting where sometimes you make these parallels and some people think, oh, that's cute. And some people think that mother would not do that with that
right.
person.
Right. Or if she does, there's something wrong with her. Like,
and,
it's
yeah. Or, it's not good. Or yeah. There's
like
there's
you haven't
thing.
Moved past your son's death. You're just
right.
like putting that on
yeah.
to somebody else.
Or like the screenwriter forgets how much time has passed.
Oh.
And it's like, they wouldn't do that in a week or
right.
like however long that's portrayed in there. So similarly, I think you avoid that by not doing the Inklings because it might seem cheap if he just now all of a sudden has these new friends and they do, you know, depending on how they film it, depending
right.
on how they contextualize it.
They make it feel like it's the same thing for him
right.
again.
But at the same time, I think that a lot of fans of Tolkien expected Lewis and,
right,
and
to show
Inklings,
up, the Inklings
to be
to
a part
up.
Of the movie. So go into what you were thinking.
So because they were making a big deal out of him not being able to find his voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's how we could put it.
Yeah.
He started struggling with his writing, and it was making his family suffer. Like, he was not present with his family as much because he was struggling to get whatever he was trying to write, and none of it was getting sold and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I thought then that they would introduce the Inklings as kind of the way to be like, no, you can still be this. We've all lost people too, because most of the Inklings have been in the war as well.
Right.
Like, kindred minds who are like, yeah, we lost something, but we still have this voice and we can bring that
right.
out again. So I was kind of expecting them to show up at some point and be like, yeah, hey, you can still have this. Not in the same like creepy sense of like, we're going to replace your friends, because it's not like that.
Right.
But in the sense of, you know, those of us who are still here can keep pressing on.
Mm-hmm.
But I did appreciate the way that they did it, where it's kind of he instead moved on as a tribute to this friend that he had lost and be like, see, this is what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we all had wanted.
Right.
So I can still move on with that.
Right. Yeah, and within, like, to your point, within the voice of the movie, within the themes that it was going into, I think the screenwriter that handled it well would have been able to handle that Inklings thing without it being cheap, if they kept
if
it
they
about
had done
that. Then,
yeah.
Because then it would seem more like Tolkien is bringing
this
wellspring of
right,
knowledge
especially
and
since
experience to
it was him it. And I'm trying to think of who actually, I mean, Lewis probably actually instigated calling it Inklings and making it a thing, but I am fairly sure it's Tolkien and Barfield, who he meets later on as well, that actually were the spirit of it. You know what I mean? Because Lewis was a very, what's the word? contentious person, like on purpose.
Yeah.
He liked to play devil's advocate. He liked to debate stuff. He liked to stir stuff up.
Which is what I thought was funny about having the one character that's a musician.
Oh,
it
yeah,
seemed
yeah.
very much like that spirit. I could see him being
right.
that way with Lewis later on.
But Tolkien was the one, the most successful one, as far as like getting his books published. He's the one most people have read. He was the more emotionally impactful one, I guess. Because like if you read any of and like he wrote the most fiction too, I think. I don't really know much nonfiction that he's done. I know that
yeah,
he
so prolific would be
right.
Kind of the word.
Well, no, I think Lewis wrote more.
Oh, really?
Because Lewis had a lot, but Lewis did a lot more
non-fiction. I guess I'm confusing it with just the how friggin' huge.
Well, yeah, it's a
Tolkien.
Huge book. Like, The Lord of the Rings is big. Don't
yeah,
get me wrong. As far as fiction goes, I think
but
he
yeah,
did the
I,
most
I,
words in fiction.
But yeah, in terms of how many
how many things he's published. Like, Lewis, I think,
yeah.
published a lot more, but Lewis published a lot more non-fiction.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of became the, like, voice of apologetics for Christianity at the time.
Yeah.
As opposed to Tolkien, who was just like, look, there's this beauty that I want to share with the world, and I'm going to do that.
Right, yeah.
And he had
poetry,
that
yeah.
kind of level, that yeah. transcendent level of impact on people because
right.
he kicked off what everyone knows as fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to, I mean, like, Lewis had some influence on things, but not quite to that level.
Right. I also expected this movie to be more fan service-y.
Yeah.
Because there were certainly different, like, little in-jokes, like, they go to the magic ring.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is part of where he got that from.
Right,
it's the Ring Saga. That there's a actual German legend, epic poetry saga, actually, about a ring found by Sigmund. Sigmund. And so they go to the Wagner opera based on that
Amadeus.
Legend.
And somebody makes a joke like, who would want to sit through
six hours.
Of a story about a ring?
We're all like, how about 12? We got you beat. Also the stuff about like, but then instead of it really being fan servicey, it's just, this is stuff that was actually from his life.
It was diegetic.
So his
all
companion in the war, his name was Sam. And you're like, oh, so that's guy. Yeah. We know where this is from.
Yeah. So
and
I think that's
like that.
The thing is that I was listening to some reviews and they were talking about, they were in an audience full of kind of like smug people who were kind of like, yeah, I know what that means. But it wasn't an hour and a half of that.
Yeah, right. It was just bits and pieces.
And that's usually, I think, reducing, it's very reductive as a biopic is when you just hit those things because everybody going to see this movie knows all that stuff. So they don't just want to see that. They want more of a deeper sense of like, this is the person that you don't know.
Right.
And it did that work of,
especially since the other thing I was thinking was, I don't know how much of it was true, like where they pulled it from, because Tolkien never did an autobiography. Lewis wrote about himself a lot. So you can tell which bits they put in and which bits they pulled straight from his autobiographies.
Okay.
Tolkien, I've never read anything like that about. So I didn't know. I would love to know if he actually did get drunk and like, start screaming in Elvish at his professors at Oxford, because that cracked me up to no end. I'm like, are you serious? This is what you do? You get drunk and then you go scream in Elvish at people? Like, what in the world? But it was that kind of stuff where it's like, if you actually really love Tolkien and what he did, like, it was high-level fan servicey. The fact that they went off on speeches on language and about which languages and showed him speaking Old English, which was his favorite, and, like, all this stuff that you would know if you had really read into his things, that stuff I loved.
Yeah.
Like, that professor's speech about just the word oak.
Yeah.
Right? You're just like, I love this. Can we just have 3 hours of this? Because I would sit here forever.
Yeah, there aren't many biopics that I watch that Bohemian Rhapsody was a good example of this, where it captures the spirit of what made that artist so amazing.
Right.
And that idea of his love of language being what pervaded his art, and that being powerful to the people around him, was really, you know, captivating. The idea of, like you were saying with the scene of him getting drunk, Aaron Sorkin talks about this with The Social Network. It's another one of my favorite biopics. He talks about there being a scene where, what's his name? I'm blanking, the creator of Facebook.
Zuckerberg,
yeah. Is sitting there and he's within the scene, the idea is at some point he was drinking to get drunk. And so in real life, he was drinking beer. But in order to get that across within a shot, he had him making a screwdriver. And so that was the type of thing. It was in the screenwriting course I took of his. He was saying there are things like that that are cheats and that are kind of like magic tricks to like emblemize the idea of something that happened in real life, but it's not directly analogous to it. And so I think that that's the spirit of what was interesting about this movie, was that it seemed to really communicate the larger picture, or the larger, you know, it was a portrait of a larger, you know, life.
Right.
And it really captured those essential elements of what I like about Tolkien. And I've only, you know, I've read Hobbit, I've read Lord of the Rings, but I didn't know much about him, his personal life going into it. And it seemed to balance that well, of just like, it's a really good drama and it's a really good, you know,
study of his intellectual pursuits.
It
seems
like the people worked on it really cared about him, cared about his art, stuff like that. So highly recommend.
Yes. Good stuff.
So send us your thoughts. If you've seen Tolkien, if you like Tolkien, hit us up at Twitter and Facebook at Unboxing Story.
Yep.
Email us at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com. And also hit like the good people at
Pod Sound School.
You can review us on Apple Podcasts. We would deeply appreciate it.
Or any place where you listen to us.
Yes.
Because I know we're on multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Find us, rate us, enjoy. We will shout out for you too. I will tweets about you.
Yes. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.